Hello, and welcome to Mystery Road. My name is Taylor.
And my name is Donovan. Mystery Road is a monthly podcast that examines the dark, strange, and unknown.
Want more updates on the show? Follow us on Instagram at Mystery Road Pod. Have suggestions and ideas for future shows? Email us at mysterieroadpod@gmail.com.
Help support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/mysteryroadpod. Now, let's take a stroll down Mystery Road.
Prior to us starting today's episode, we would like to take a quick moment to tell you a bit about ourselves and why we chose the paranormal and true crime genres for our podcast. Donovan and I are a couple located in Colorado. I have always been a problem solver, one to carefully analyze the details in order to find the answers. Both professionally as an accountant and personally with my interest in true crime and paranormal research, I have been able to use those skills to dive in deep and find the answers that are out there. My interest in paranormal initially peaked when I had my own experience with what I can only describe as a ghostly encounter. Donovan and I are known to binge watch and listen to major TV crime shows and podcasts, and at one point I even wanted to be a detective.
Hey guys, it's Donovan. Thanks for joining us today. We are very excited to bring you our very first podcast episode. Since I was a child, my mother and I would watch true crime TV shows and documentaries for entertainment. Through college, I studied criminal justice and learned more about the criminal psyche and ultimately earned an Associate of Arts degree. I now work as a litigation paralegal, which requires me to analyze and retain large amounts of information on various subjects. The case management and organizational skills I have learned through my professional career have assisted Taylor and me in selecting and investigating episode topics. Now that you know a little about us, let's dig into episode one. Today's episode focuses on the Cecil Hotel, more specifically the bizarre events that have occurred there, including suicides, murders, and even the home to two serial killers. Is it possible for an area to attract evil and despair? Can a building be doomed for tragedy? That's the story of the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles, California. Many people claim the hotel is cursed and draws misfortune to it. The Cecil has been the inspiration for many documentaries and even the popular TV show American Horror Story Season 5, Hotel. The Cecil Hotel's story is one that began like many others, full of hope, happiness, and the desire for rewards. Sadly, however, it resulted in many tragic and horrendous events. Some of the most infamous cases are the disappearance of Elisa Lam, serial killer Richard Ramirez, aka the Night Stalker, and the 1964 unsolved murder of Pigeon Goldie Osgood.
Before we get ahead of ourselves, let's jump back to 1924, the beginning of the Cecil story. William Banks Hanner had an idea, a beautiful hotel with 14 floors and 700 rooms. It was one of the larger hotels in Los Angeles at the time. The hotel lobby greeted guests with marble floors and stained glass windows. Hanner's business model was to create a high-end hotel for middle-class businessmen, short-term travelers, and social elitists at a low cost. Over the next 3 years, he would spend approximately $1 million designing and building the Cecil, resulting in the hotel opening in 1927. To put his investment into perspective, that would be approximately $13.8 million today. Unfortunately for Mr. Hanner, that vision of beauty quickly turned into terror and dismay.
Just 3 short years after the hotel opened, the Roaring Twenties came to a screeching halt, with the 30s welcoming the Great Depression across America. Many people lost their jobs and homes, and many struggled to pay for their food. Shortly after the Great Depression, Central North America experienced a multitude of severe dust storms, famously known as the Dust Bowl. Somewhere between 300,000 to 400,000 people are reported to have packed up and made their way out west to California, with 100,000 of them settling in Los Angeles. Although California was struggling like the rest of the country, agriculture was still a growing income source. Families could also apply for higher unemployment pay, with families of four receiving up to $40 a month. However, not everyone was lucky enough to find a job or qualify for unemployment, causing many people to be homeless and to live their lives on the streets. The Cecil Hotel is located in an area known as Skid Row, a 56-block region that was established by the city of Los Angeles in 1976 to sanction homeless people in shelters. Unofficially referred to as a containment zone, Skid Row is lawless, with crime happening openly, high rates of human trafficking occurring, and drug use on the streets. The city has been known to release inmates within the boundaries of Skid Row automatically, causing it to be known as a very dangerous area of Los Angeles. Additionally, the city adopted measures such as police barricades to prevent homeless individuals from leaving Skid Row. As a result of these policies and practices, most sanctuaries, soup kitchens, and government-run medical facilities are located within Skid Row. This further incentivizes homeless individuals to not leave the boundaries of Skid Row. Today, the city estimates there are approximately 8,000 to 10,000 homeless individuals residing in Skid Row. Unsurprisingly, this 56-block area has now become one of the poorest and most poverty-stricken places in the world. The Cecil was no exception to the dangerous activity occurring around it, and quickly began to gain a bad reputation.
Now that we have a little backstory about the Cecil and where it's located, let's start to dig into the cursed Cecil and the many awful events that occurred there. In 1927, a very well-to-do real estate agent by the name of Percy Orman Cook checked into the Cecil after his wife divorced him and his son moved away to college. His battle with depression finally caught up to him, but not before he spent more than $40,000 in a vain attempt to find happiness. In the end, Mr. Cook could not handle the idea of being alone and decided to end his own life by shooting himself in the head. Immediately before pulling the trigger, he wrote a few words to his wife, his son, and the press.
The following quote is from the Los Angeles Times newspaper on January 23, 1927. "Money cannot buy happiness. I have tried it and I find it cannot be done. I have lost my wife, my son, and my home, and I'm doing the only thing left for me to do." End quote.
It would be 4 more years before the Cecil saw its next horrific event. A news article written in the LA Times on Thursday, November 19, 1931, reported W.K. Norton, a man from Manhattan Beach, had gone missing. November 14, 1931, the Saturday Mr. Norton went missing, he checked into the Cecil Hotel under the false name James Willies, claiming to be from Chicago. That same day, Mr. Norton was found in his room after ingesting a poison capsule of cyanide. Police reported finding additional cyanide capsules in his vest pocket, which led their investigation to suicide instead of murder. Although the question remains why Mr. Norton would check into a hotel across the country under a false name, claiming to be from a false location, only to end his own life. Could someone have been after him? Maybe Mr. Norton made some bad investments and loan sharks came to collect. We may never be able to answer those questions. What we do know is, the police investigation quickly ended when the coroner ruled his death a suicide. Even though, one could argue, a fake name, fake address, and poison found at the scene should have created enough probable cause for the police to perform a further investigation. The deaths related to the Cecil did not slow down once they started. Over the next decade, the Cecil's body count quickly rose with 6 more suicides. September 1934, Benjamin Doddridge, 25, was found dead from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. July 26, 1937, Sergeant Luis Borden, 53, was found dead after he slashed his throat with a razor blade, leaving a note blaming his poor health for his suicide. March 1938, Grace Margot, 25, fell from the 9th-story window, but her fall was broken by some telephone wires, and she later died in the hospital. Police were unable to determine if it was a suicide or an accident. January 1939, Roy Thompson, 35, died jumping from the Cecil and landing on the skylight of another building. May 1939, Erwin Neblett, 39, was found dead in his room after ingesting poison. January 1940, Dorothy Seeger, 45, ended her own life by ingesting poison and leaving notes for her family members. By the 1940s, the Cecil had earned a deplorable reputation, but there was so much more to come.
In 1944, 19-year-old Dorothy Jean Purcell awoke on an early September morning with severe abdominal complaints. Not wanting to wake her much older lover, Ben Levine, she went to the shared bathroom on the 13th floor where she unexpectedly gave birth to a baby boy. Miss Purcell did not hear the baby cry nor make any noise and assumed the baby was stillborn. She then flung her newborn out of her room's window, confirming his death. Miss Purcell then calmly went back to bed, intending never to tell Mr. Levine what happened. Shortly after the incident, an unknown individual found the baby on the roof of 640 South Main Street, a building directly beside the Cecil. Shortly after the newborn's body was found, the police were notified. Officer Stuart Jones arrested Dorothy and charged her with homicide. It was quoted in the LA Times, County autopsy surgeon Frank R. Webb declared the baby was born alive, his lungs having filled with air, end quote. In January 1945, Dorothy's trial for homicide began. Three psychiatrists testified that Dorothy was mentally confused at the time of the incident. One juror described the testimony as almost beyond belief. Nevertheless, the jury found Dorothy not guilty because of insanity.
Between January 1940 and October 1962, three additional suicides happened. November 1947, Robert Smith, 35, jumped out of the seventh floor window. October 22nd, 1954, Helen Gurney, 55, also jumped from the seventh floor window. February 11th, 1962, Julia Frances Moore, 50, jumped from the eighth floor window. The most bizarre suicide happened on October 12th, 1962. Pauline Otten had a tense discussion with her estranged husband, Dewey Otten, regarding the future of their marriage. Shortly after the argument, Dewey left the Cecil to go for dinner. Pauline, unable to consider life without Dewey, wrote a suicide note and then jumped out of the window of the ninth floor. At the same time, 65-year-old George Giannini was walking directly under the Otten's hotel window. Pauline ultimately landed on Mr. Giannini, killing them both instantly. Strangely, the police initially thought Ms. Otten and Mr. Giannini had leaped from the window together. This theory was quickly ruled out because Mr. Giannini's shoes were still on his feet. The police believed the force from that type of fall would have caused his shoes to come off of him. Was the incident with Mr. Giannini a coincidence, or was he another victim of the Cecil's curse? 1964 marked the Cecil's first murder of a 79-year-old woman named Goldie Osgood. She was a retired telemarketer born May 31st, 1885 in Eagle Grove, Iowa. She later moved to California and ultimately ended up calling the Cecil her home. The Cecil considered her a longtime resident, having moved there 6 years prior. The neighborhood locals called Miss Osgood Pigeon Goldie. She earned her nickname because she loved visiting Pershing Square every evening to feed the pigeons. Friends even reported her most violent act was scaring off the larger birds to protect the pigeons.
On the evening of Thursday, June 4th, 1964, an employee of the Cecil Hotel was walking the halls distributing phone books. He noticed Pigeon Goldie's door was open and entered the room to investigate. Unfortunately, he walked into a scene from a horror film. The employee found the room ransacked, Pigeon Goldie dead, lying on the floor in her own blood, with her favorite Dodgers baseball hat and a bag of pigeon feed beside her. The coroner's report showed she had been sexually assaulted, stabbed, and strangled to death with a hand towel. According to the Pershing Square Tribune, investigators said the crime may have been committed by the same man who slew another woman, Mrs. Viva Brown, 50, of Oakland, in a nearby hotel last May 16th, end quote.
An officer reported seeing Jacques Ellinger walking in Pershing Square with bloody clothes. Officers thought they had their man after arresting Mr. Ellinger on Friday, June 5th, 1964. When questioned, he admitted that he knew Pigeon Goldie and was near the Cecil during the time of the murder. However, he denied knowing anything about the murder of Miss Brown. He was later cleared as a suspect and released from police custody due to the lack of evidence they had on him. Pigeon Goldie's murder is unsolved still today and currently resides in LA's cold case files. It would be another 10 years before the Cecil saw its next tragic event. In 1974, Allison Lowell jumped from the 20th floor, taking her own life and resulting in the Cecil's 13th recorded suicidal incident.
In 1985, the Cecil gained its most violent and dangerous guest, Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. Richard is most infamously known for his crime spree across Los Angeles from June 1984 to August 1985. His crimes include 13 violent murders, 5 attempted murders, 11 sexual assaults, and 14 burglaries. Richard grew up with an abusive father who would often strike Richard's head, hitting him so hard that Richard reported having an epileptic-type seizure episode. Richard would soon move in with his cousin, Mike Ramirez, a Vietnam veteran who would continue to abuse Richard, showed him pictures of tortured and dismembered Vietnamese women, introduced him to drugs, and ultimately killed his wife, Jessie Ramirez, right in front of Richard. Richard would soon take up satanic worship, and when combined with his drug addictions, he quickly became the Night Stalker, who put fear into all of Los Angeles. Unlike most serial killers who have very specific killings, Richard did not have a consistent motive of operation. His murders consisted of using knives, guns, and household items like a hammer. Richard's lack of consistency stumped police and prevented them from knowing a serial killer was at large. He robbed houses, killed people in their cars, and killed and sexually abused children. Tired of living on the streets or in stolen cars, Richard would eventually move into the Cecil. Although the exact dates he stayed in the hotel are unknown, we do know it was closer to the end of his crime spree, and police were on to him at this point. He felt the Cecil was a safe place for him to stay while continuing his crimes. Some guests at the time reported Richard would throw his blood-soaked clothes in the dumpster out back, walk through the hotel lobby in his underwear, and sometimes even naked up to his room on the 14th floor. Oddly, Richard being naked did not alarm any of the employees or guests due to the type of people the Cecil attracted. Even if the police were called, most of the Cecil tenants have criminal pasts and likely would not cooperate with them.
Richard Ramirez was not the only serial killer to stay at the Cecil. Jack Unterweger, a murderer from Austria who was convicted in 1976, also called the Cecil his home. Born August 16, 1950, Jack was only 7 years old when his mother, a prostitute by profession, abandoned him. Jack was left with his alcoholic grandfather, who neglected him. The negligence led Jack to resent sex workers, as it reminded him of his estranged mother. At the young age of 16, Jack was arrested for the first time for assaulting a prostitute. 10 years later, he was arrested again for the sexual assault and murder of another prostitute by the name of Margaret Schaefer. Jack killed Margaret by strangling her to death with her own bra. Using the victim's bra was a consistent motive of operation for all of his crimes. During his time in prison, Jack often wrote poetry, resulting in him having published a best-selling biography, The Trip to Jail, Report of a Guilty Man. After the release of his book, many fans and even political figures petitioned for him to be released from prison. Jack testified to the Austrian government that he was a changed man and was placed on parole in 1991. A short time later, he gained employment as a reporter with the Austrian magazine. Within a couple of months of Jack's career as a traveling journalist, 7 prostitutes were found murdered in Austria, all with the similarities to Ms. Schaefer's case. The similarities of this murder made the police suspicious of Jack. In the summer of 1991, Jack was offered an assignment in Los Angeles to investigate the cultural differences between how prostitutes are treated in America compared to Europe. Jack, having been tipped off by the other journalists that he was a suspect in the murders, quickly accepted the offer to evade further police investigation. Jack stayed at the Cecil during his 5-month assignment. He would do ride-alongs with the LA Police Department to gather intel for both his reporting assignment and future crimes. Not long after arriving in Los Angeles, he slaughtered 3 prostitutes, each one strangled to death with their own bras. The victims were Shannon Exley, 35, Irene Rodriguez, 33, and Peggy Jean Booth, 26. The Austrian government soon caught wind of the murders in the United States and attempted to extradite Jack back to Austria. Trying to evade capture, Jack fled Los Angeles and quickly made his way to Miami, where he was eventually captured by the U.S. Marshals on February 27, 1992. Jack was extradited to Austria on May 27, 1992, and charged with 11 murders. He was sentenced to life in prison on Tuesday, June 28, 1994. Shortly after his sentencing, the Austrian Ministry of Justice reported that Jack was found hanging from a curtain rod in his cell.
Quite notably, the most infamous incident at the Cecil was the disappearance of Elisa Lam. Elisa, like most girls her age, lived on social media and had created a Tumblr diary to share her life with the world. Elisa was a student at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, looking to take a vacation to escape the demands of her studies. She asked her parents for permission, who initially rejected her request. However, after she agreed to check in every day, her parents reluctantly agreed to let her go. Elisa arrived in San Diego, California by Amtrak and bus and quickly made her way to Los Angeles.
On January 28, 2013, she checked into her shared hostel room at the Cecil. Elisa's Tumblr diary entry read, "I have arrived in La La Land, and there is a monstrosity of a building next to the place I am staying. When I say monstrosity, mind you, I am saying isn't gaudy. But then again, it was built in 1928, hence the Art Deco theme. So yes, it is classy, but since it's LA, it went on crack."
Shortly after making that post, Elisa started exhibiting strange and unexplainable behavior. Her hostel roommates reported that Elisa would put sticky notes on their belongings, telling them to leave. She would even lock them out of their room and require a password to get in. After receiving several complaints from other guests, management had to get involved and transferred Elisa to a private room. She intended on only staying a few days in Los Angeles and then traveling to Santa Cruz. However, on January 31st, the day she was scheduled to check out of the Cecil, she did not check in with her parents. Elisa's parents decided to contact the Los Angeles Police Department and officially reported her missing on February 1st, 2013. The police were quickly dispatched to her last known location, the Cecil, to begin the search for her. This would be the beginning of an investigation that would take the world by large.
The police released what is now the bizarre video footage of Elisa in an elevator. The video depicted her pressing several buttons in the elevator, exhibiting strange movements, and the elevator door not closing for several minutes. There is even a moment where she pokes her head out of the elevator door several times to ensure she is not being followed. There have been plenty of speculations regarding the video, one being that there was another individual present outside the camera's view, even though no evidence has ever proved that. Elisa's case quickly became a viral phenomenon, with many internet speculations claiming Elisa had been playing the elevator game. For anyone who doesn't know about the elevator game, it's a game that can only be played in buildings with more than 10 floors. You get into the elevator alone and press the buttons in a certain pattern. The legend goes, if you complete the process, a woman will get in the elevator, but you should not talk or look at her. If the elevator goes up, you are allowed to leave and enter the other world. If the elevator goes down to the first floor, exit the elevator, leave the building, and never look back. Several weeks after her disappearance, long-term residents and hotel guests started complaining about low water pressure, discolored water, and the water tasting unusual. The hotel manager had a maintenance worker go up to the roof to inspect what the issue was and attempt to fix the problem. What he found left the entire world speechless. Unfortunately, the maintenance worker discovered Elisa, naked, inside one of the water tanks on the roof. The investigation changed from a missing person to a possible murder. Many questioned how Elisa would have been able to gain access to the roof, get into the water tank without assistance, and why she was found with her clothes removed. The police later revealed that Elisa was not properly taking her psychological medications, causing her to have a manic episode, which the coroner contributed to her accidental suicide.
The most recent horrific event at the Cecil occurred on June 13, 2015, when a young man was found dead outside the Cecil. Initially, it appeared he had fallen to his death. However, the coroner was unable to rule out both murder and suicide. The Cecil assistant manager confirmed the young man was not a guest at the hotel. We were unable to find any other details at this time. The total number of deaths at the Cecil is unknown. However, most agree at least 17 people have died in the hotel, making the Cecil the most haunted hotel in Los Angeles. The Cecil's long, grim past of suicide, murder, and serial killer guests has made many ask why such a beautiful and inexpensive hotel became a place of death and dismay. Thankfully, there have been no incidents since 2015. One can only hope that the Cecil will overcome the horrific and tragic reputation it has rightfully earned over the last 98 years. Let us know what you think. Do you think the Cecil is cursed? Do you think the building is destined for future tragedy? That's it for this episode. Thank you all very much for taking the time to listen to our first podcast. Next month, we will travel to Martin, Ohio to investigate the Halloween massacre of the Lisk family. If you like our content, please like, share, and subscribe. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Mystery Road Pod. Also, consider donating to our Patreon at patreon.com/Mystery Road Pod to help support the show. Links will be in the show notes.